I'm Darlene. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Darlene.
Hello, Darlene.
Thank you, Don, for asking me to share. I have a rule about not refusing any job that I'm asked to do in AA. Today is my 6 month anniversary. Someone was supposed to give me a 6 month chip. It is the 28th today, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Someone was supposed to give me a chip yesterday, and I forgot to go to the anyway, I'm so lost in time because I am moving. I did say I'm an alcoholic. I had a hard time saying that at first, but I don't know why. It just made me cringe. Something interesting happened yesterday. I've been praying lately to heal my family, the relationships that I have with my family, because something I've done... I don't know if it's because of my alcoholism, but I have brought chaos into my family all my life, and I've hurt relationships in there. And anyway, I've been praying for those to heal. And for the first time, I have no memory of my mother ever telling me she loved me, and yesterday she told me she loved me. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm coming back to AA. I was in AA about 20 years ago, and I've returned to AA in Montreal, I mean. I came back to Montreal in April. I would describe myself as a bit of a tumbleweed because I tumble into cities and out of cities, and I was married for a long time, and it was the only time I didn't move around a lot, because my husband had, you know, he was absolutely the opposite of a tumbleweed. And now that we're separated, it seems that's what I do. And I don't think it's geographical cures. I really do think it's what I do. I know people have this idea, if you move, you're always seeking geographical cures. But I think there are some people who move and some people who stay put. Anyway, and I think I've always moved. Although I did start my life moving a lot. I come from, I was born in Montreal in 1960. And a lot has changed in the world, in Canada, in Montreal, since 1960. For example, until 1968, a married woman could not have a bank account of her own in Quebec. So a lot has changed. There was no birth control, there was no abortion. You really rarely heard of people getting divorced, you know. The word shack-up didn't exist, right? You know, people didn't mention those sorts of things. So a lot has changed. When I was a kid, I'm the third child of many children. My mother had four and my father had five. And it was a very dysfunctional family. With my mother's children, every time I didn't know my father that well because he was a very, very violent alcoholic. And my parents would get together, they'd make up. When I came around, my father was hardly ever around. But when he was around, he'd be around for a few days, a week, and then he'd get drunk and beat the hell out of my mother. And we would have to put our things in garbage bags and run away. And this was what my childhood was like. We were always moving. The safest place we could go was to my grandfather's house. My grandfather had a duplex in NDG, and my grandfather was starting to have wet brain as well. He had some problems. He hoarded cats. He had about 70-something cats. And at that time, NDG was a very middle-class neighborhood. There was a dentist living across the street. It's changed. You know, things change. Neighborhoods change. And when we were living with my grandfather, we were safe from my father, but it was a very horrible environment. And from very early on, I remember never feeling comfortable with other people, never feeling welcome around other kids. A lot of kids were now not even allowed to associate with us. You know, it was the house on the street where my grandfather had a mistress, and she would sit out on the front balcony, you know, drunk as a skunk and smoking and swearing at the kids. And, you know, it was, you know, other kids weren't allowed to associate with us. And I had a lot of shame, and I had a lot of anger and frustration. And even though I came from a very chaotic family, I contributed a lot to the chaos too, even from a very early age. I was always trying to convince my mother, even as a 4 or 5 or 6 year old, to move. Anyway, I convinced my husband to move when I met him. He'd been living in the same place for 11 years. That worked. But anyway, so here I am and still moving. But I don't know if... I don't think it's a geographical cure. I think it's a smart move. I started drinking... I tried alcohol, and I drank alcoholically from probably the first time I drank. When I was 8 years old, my cousin and I, my aunt was in a hospital because she'd had a mental breakdown. And we were left pretty much alone in the house. And my 5 or 6 year old cousin and I raided the liquor cabinet and drank everything. Like, we did it over a week or 2 weeks, but we that's what we did. And we took all my aunt's pills, and it's amazing we didn't die. And I didn't generally drink a lot until later on when I was around 19, because my mother did not... My mother suffers from depression and some other emotional health issues, and she did not like at all... alcohol in the house. She didn't want us to drink at all. But drugs were not that bad. So we took a lot of drugs. I took a lot of drugs. And then when I was in CEGEP later on, I started to try to drink socially, because my friends were drinking socially. And I didn't really drink socially. I never really got away. Even from the very first times I was drinking with my friends socially, they were already saying, you know, you've drank the whole bottle there, you know. Can you save some for us? And so anyway, I'm 48 years old, and I've been basically drinking socially in various forms most of my life, since I was about 19. And I did have a period a couple of years way back when, 20 years ago, when I was in the program, because actually I was having problems with alcohol even in my 20s. I would drink to fall asleep and drink as soon as I got home. And I had the shakes in the morning. Every time I drink, it seems, I promise myself I'll never drink again. So this has been my drinking career. I don't think I've ever really had a few drinks and gone home and woken up the next day and felt good. It's always been drank too much, hangovers, or whatever. When I drink, like, I've seen photographs of myself drinking, and even if I just have one or two drinks, I look like a drunk. There's something changes in the way I look. And my face gets red. I start looking a little too excited or whatever. But I've seen pictures of myself, and I think, oh my God, I only had, you know, that's only at the first glass of wine they took that picture, and I already look drunk. And the people I'm with are already asking if I'm driving. You know? Anyway, but I've tried to... control my drinking. I've tried, I like hard stuff, hard liquor, but I have blackouts very easily. And so I've tried, wine, but then I can drink a couple of bottles of wine in an evening, and then I can have a blackout. So I tried, maybe beer, and then I've tried light beer, and then I've tried watering down the wine, you know, with some Kool-Aid or whatever. Anyway, so I've tried all of those things. I had a period with my marriage where I didn't drink in front of my husband because he didn't approve of it. So I've had a lot of time not drinking, but I've never had much control drinking. I either drink or I don't. There's no control. When I came into the program when I was younger, I was hoping that I could stop drinking long enough to finish school, get a good job, and then I could have a good, secure job and drink and drink and drink whenever I wanted. Like, come home. I don't know what I was, but this was somehow my reason for being in the program a long time ago, what I'd hoped to get out of it. But after a while, I sort of realized that that wasn't really how it works. You know, the idea that I can drink like a normal person is just unrealistic. I've tried it. I've tried it for a few decades, and it hasn't worked. And I drank in different ways as well. Sometimes I've drank on the weekends for periods. Sometimes every day, every night, every waking moment I can get away with it. And when my husband and I separated a year ago, I drove across the country from BC to Prince Edward Island, and I had a bender for 6 months. And that took its toll. After 6 months of drinking daily, as much as I could, and blackouts all winter, I had a hard time concentrating on anything. I came to Montreal at the end of, in April. I isolated myself in a cabin and I couldn't take it anymore, so I drove to Montreal. And I started taking a French course. And I could not figure out what letter came after what letter to look up things in the dictionary. That's the toll that it took on my brain, that much drinking. I became addicted over that 6 months, physically so addicted that when I ran out of alcohol, I wasn't able to get any for a few days, and I searched my cottage high and low for a bottle of rubbing alcohol that I knew I had a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I had seen it, I knew it was there, and I could not find it. Anyway, I came to Montreal in April. When I went back in August to get my things, it was exactly where I expected it to be when I was looking for it. So, thank goodness that I didn't drink it, because maybe I would have had a coma and froze to death or something, because I was heating the place with a wood stove and it was a cold winter. And I think maybe it was divine intervention. Or maybe it was just subconsciously I was protecting myself and I didn't see it. But I really looked for that bottle of rubbing alcohol. And whenever I think I'm not an alcoholic, I think back on that, because I can talk myself into not being an alcoholic. You know, I have been walking down the street and feeling kind of like, oh, no, I'm not an alcoholic. That's a cult. AA is a cult. I'm not an alcoholic. I just really need a drink. And I've actually said that to myself. So alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it can defy all reason. And remembering that bottle of rubbing alcohol, that keeps me remembering that I'm an alcoholic, because I can't talk myself out of that that's not alcoholic thinking. Anybody who would want to drink a bottle of rubbing alcohol, I think, doesn't just need a drink. And when I came into the program this time around, there had been a gap of 20 years, but I had had a couple of years sober. And in the past, but when I came back in, you know what had happened was I forgot completely how everything worked. Like, it completely left my mind. When I came into the program, I was just, someone got me to come to a meeting saying, you know, meet me there for another reason. It wasn't because I was going to a meeting, I was meeting her to do something else. And I went to 5 o'clock Shadows, and when I went in there, I thought that the chairperson and the secretary were bouncers. Like, that's That's how much I forgot how it worked. It just, none of it made sense to me. I forgot completely. I knew what a meeting list was, though. I had a hard time stopping to drink. My nerves were really frayed. I had the jitters for a long time. And I felt really suicidal for a long time. And what I found gave me comfort was taking beginner's chips. And so every time I had the opportunity to accept a beginner's chip, I would take a beginner's chip until I felt okay. Like I really felt, you know, I'll do anything. I'll take anything. I made coffee. I set up. I greeted. I came early. I went to 3 meetings a day. Anyway, I ended up taking 20 beginner's chips and returning them eventually. But one of the things that I got that I find the most valuable, that I feel I've gotten out of the program so far, is conscious contact with my higher power. I feel before I came to AA, I mean, when I was little, I remember praying to God to bring my cat back from the dead. You know, please, I'll change places, anything. You know, but of course that doesn't happen. But that was like, you know, the extent of my praying. I've never had much exposure to religion or anything like that. When I was a child, I remember asking my mother. My mom was sitting on the toilet, and I think I was 4 years old, and we were talking about God, and I remember saying, "What, you mean God is everywhere? God is here, in the bathroom?" Anyway, so she said, "Yes, yes," and I always felt that after that, God is everywhere, but I never had the concept that God was punishing or mean. I always believed that God was a loving. If God did exist, God was, and God was good, because that's what, for me, God is something very, very good. The goodest of all goodness. And the power of most powerful and the most good. And there's no place for that, for anger and punishment and loss of control, because those are things, punishment to me is, you know, anger, and you don't have any forgiveness. But anyway, my idea of heaven is everybody gets to go. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Everybody gets enlightenment. When we die, everyone's enlightened and everyone is forgiven. And I wouldn't want to go to heaven if everybody didn't get to go. I don't want anybody to be left behind. So it wasn't difficult for me. You know, this idea of punishment and that. What was difficult for me was actually believing that God cared and God did exist. If God exists, well, that's what God is. But maybe God didn't exist. And although I did have a period of, when I came into the program, I was just, I was kind of manic and nervous and crazy, and I felt as though God, at one point I really had a strong feeling that God was fed up with me. You know? Like, I have even pushed God away. But I don't now. Now, I pray every day. I pray for guidance in the morning and to be a better person. Actually, I turn my will and my life over every morning, and then I often give God a list of things that I want, that I want to work on. But and in the evening, I always thank God, and I always pray for my family. I hear people sometimes in the program say how they didn't feel loved, or they didn't. I didn't feel I belonged and didn't feel I fit in the rest of the world. But I never doubted the love of my family ever in my life, but anyone in my family. I still don't. I feel very loved by my family, and I feel very grateful to have that. I'm sad to be leaving the fellowship, in Montreal. Got to watch the time here. I really, really, really like this fellowship, and I feel that over time I will make really, really good friends here, lifetime friends probably. But I do feel I am moving on. But the fellowship in Montreal is so nice, and when I left Montreal a long time ago, I tried a lot of different fellowships around the country on my little way, and Montreal does have a really nice fellowship. It really is really warm and, you know, special, and I really like that. Anyway, I don't know what else to say. When I came into the when I came today, I just turned it over to God and asked God to help me to share something that will help others and me. And I don't have a plan to share, but I hope that my sharing today has helped someone. Anyway, thank you again, Don, for asking me to speak.
I remember that. It's not my privilege to thank you, though. I've asked Colleen.